when I found LEED, it said, well, hey, it gives you the feel of the MBA. It gives you the famed GSB teachings, you know, and learnings, and felt like, okay, well, this could be a good opportunity to maybe see if I do want to do my MBA.
The voice you just heard was Anoush Todipudi, a classmate of mine at the Stanford Graduate School of Business LEED program. In this episode, we break down the LEED program and discuss executive education, which by 2031 is expected to be a $100 billion industry. Enjoy. Good. All right. Well, thanks for joining the podcast today.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Excellent. Well, obviously, you and I met through the Stanford LEED program, and today, really looking forward to just kind of getting your experience with the program, kind of what drew you to it, and kind of just doing, I don't know, call it a bit of a review, but kind of bringing it to life for folks through your experience, my experience, that kind of thing. So maybe we could start, you know, I'm curious about a little bit about your kind of academic background, as well as kind of what drew you to the LEED program.
Yeah, absolutely. So, thanks for having me, and good to chat with you as well after some time. So my academic background was, I have an undergrad in aerospace engineering. At the time, I had signed up for LEED out of school, probably, let's say, 10 years, finished in 2010. So, you know, I was 32 at the time of signing up for LEED. Been in the industry within the jet engine realm and space for about 10 years, doing various engineering roles and then stepping into a commercial side of the business. My undergrad was in aerospace engineering with minors in math and computer science.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, it's interesting. I know you recently moved back to the Bay Area as well. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. So at the time I joined LEED was just freshly about 2 to 3 months outside of the Bay Area.
Excellent. Well, congratulations. And congrats. I understand you have a new baby as well. So congratulations there as well.
Yeah. Thank you. No, yeah. New baby. And you know, during the whole COVID, you know, we were definitely... We had a baby, we got some pets, so we definitely were among the population, among the statistics that expanded during COVID. But then, you know, my wife is from the West Coast originally, and she's wanting to get back to the Bay Area. And so now I work for a startup where we're tackling, like, you know, bringing zero emissions to the skies. And they're out here, even though it's remote, you know, I can work from home most of the time and travel to customers, partners. We're glad to be back, and yeah, with our expanded family. So it was quite an interesting move.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, so you know, it's interesting. You have this strong academic background. You've got these deep kind of technical skills, it sounds like, with engineering and science and math, etc. So I'm curious, you know, what was it, I guess, that, you know, you thought you were either lacking, or what did you want to build on that made LEED attractive?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, to be honest with you, I had not heard of the LEED program. Uh-huh. Probably about, I was a late applicant. I definitely applied probably a couple of days before the deadline. And I had not heard about LEED until I moved out to Atlanta. I wasn't extremely happy with pretty much from the beginning. I knew there were some issues with long-term longevity in both the location and then in terms of my job over there. I was definitely in my department. So aviation is kind of a legacy, you know, industry, right? It's an aging industry. It's trying to get, you know, we're entering this third era of aviation. And the way I classify it is, first era is like basically Wright brothers up to the jet age. And the jet age up till, like, you know, the last few years is really the second era. And so jet engines really turned aviation into the global force that it is. Basically, you could start to pressurize cabins. You could start to do a lot of things at higher altitudes and travel long distances with the, you know, invention of the jet engine. And so that's been the second era and what we know aviation to be as of today. And then this third era is now, you know, taking it, removing the fossil fuel element out of it and getting into a, you know, whether it's fully electric by batteries or fuel cells, that's to be determined. But but yeah, this is the third era. And so since joining the industry 10 years ago, or like around 2010, 2011 timeframe, you know, I kind of saw some of my peers that went into computer science, you know, some of my friends that did computer science or business and you know, other fields, and they would go into some other industries, and especially the tech industry, you know, and you know, kind of make changes and make waves, you know, with pretty flat structures. You know, the ability to affect and impact change is, or at least, you know, from an outsider's perspective, seemed to be a bit easier. And I saw them having a lot of fun at work. And now, don't get me wrong, I had a great time in my early days. I, you know, did product development, jet engines, and then I worked for airlines as well. And I really enjoyed the technical aspect of it, but I always felt that maybe the work, the culture I'm looking for, or the type of environment I'm looking for, is maybe something that is a little less traditional and a little less structured. You know, there's rightly so, there's a lot of checks and balances within aviation, but because the fact that it's, you know, it's pretty much a 50, you know, it's been around 100 years since the invention of the aircraft, but it's, you know, the industry as it is probably formed 50 or 60 years ago, and there hasn't been a lot of upheaval, so to speak, you know, and it's also an industry. It's a very necessity, and you know, we need air travel. We need to move things, you know, not just people, but cargo. It's you know, annihilated distances, but you know, it's also often affected by world happenings beyond its control. I mean, for example, you know, 9/11, the bankruptcies in the 2000s, the last recession, you know, COVID, of course, absolutely decimated air travel. You know, and then now, even now with the Ukraine-Russia crisis, it affects aviation. And just because of the global supply chain, you know, are set up to be all around the world. There's a lot of leasing companies that have leased aircrafts to Russian airlines. There's a lot of revenue and money generated back and forth between Union Airlines flying to Russia, and you know, a lot of that is gone. So it's definitely a tough industry to be a part of, but you have to have a love or passion for aviation to be a part of it. And the reason I'm bringing that up is that, you know, basically when I moved to Atlanta, I was in the Bay Area working for United Airlines for 4 years, and kind of, you know, enjoyed, even though I wasn't in the tech scene, I kind of enjoyed some of the innovation and some of the culture I was surrounded myself with friends. And when we went to Atlanta, was, you know, missing that pretty quickly. And of course, COVID was a rough time for everyone. But I actually, the way I found LEAD was I was looking for thinking, okay, well, you know what, maybe if I want to pivot into a new segment of my industry, or maybe a completely different industry, because at the time my mind was kind of open to thinking, well, what do I want to do with my next 15 years? You know, I've gained some really good technical experience, used that to move into a commercial background. And I was looking for MBA programs, and, you know, Stanford was on the list of schools. I was like, well, you know, I have enough of the, you know, on paper, I have what it takes to make it to a school like Stanford. But, you know, let me look at the applications, what I need to get ready and geared for. And then I saw LEAD, I applied and then got in. And then a couple of months later, I was in a class with you. So,
Yeah, great. No, that makes good sense. And, you know, I was doing a little bit of reading on the program, and there's a huge percentage of people who are in LEAD who actually already have graduate degrees as well, and both MBAs and even postgraduate degrees. So that was kind of interesting to me. I was kind of like you, Anush. I've always had this inkling to do the MBA, but at the same time, when I would weigh both the cost and the time commitment versus, you know, versus where progress you could continue to make in your career, that's where it's always been a little bit of a disconnect. And for me, I've had exposure to other sort of executive education, like certificate programs that are well done. I mean, really well done, like at Columbia and also Oxford, things like that. But they were all kind of short and very specific. And this was the first one that had more of a feel of an MBA, even if it wasn't the full MBA. That's really interesting. Well, yeah. I think when you and I started, because we were in the same cohort, right? And at LEAD, every cohort has a name. We were the navigators. But when you and I started, you know, I think we had kind of a big wake-up call when we had those first two classes, critical thinking, I think financing innovation. And so that was a bit of a shock to the system for me. I was curious, you know, for you, was it hard with that idea of going, quote, back to school?
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely was. You know, being 10 years out, and I've done a couple of trainings and other courses in the interim, but you know, I think you and I had chatted about it then, and I think everyone in our group for critical thinking was kind of feeling the same way, that it had been some years since school. So it was definitely, because I also recall that the LEAD program, you know, and first of all, I mean, it was overall, I would say it was a great experience, but you know, I remember reading when signing up for it that it was going to be about 5 to 10 hours a week. And I thought, yeah, that's perfect. You know, I thought, okay, yeah, 2 hours a day, or, you know, maybe a whole day plus a little bit of, I mean, a whole Saturday or a whole Sunday plus a little bit of one of the other days, you know, that's not a problem. 10 hours, you know, maybe it's a little bit more than that, not a big deal. But reality, I pretty much found that, especially if you wanted to do a good job, you know, especially the amount of content they had available, which was great. It was interactive, you know, the group work. But you know, it ended up, you know, and it actually even got worse. I would say that first semester probably was about 15 or 16 hours a week. And I would say later in the program, I was doing almost 20, you know, sometimes even 25 hours a week, which is significant. You know, that's a part-time job. So, that's something that, definitely the first few weeks I found it a bit difficult, saying that, okay, well, you know, this is something that I have to do on top of my day job. And, you know, just like anything in life, the more you prep for it and the more you, you know, want to read into it, the better, the more you get out of it. And so the first few weeks were a bit difficult because I just found myself wanting to spend more and more time. And then slowly as the semester went through, you know, I basically, or the quarter went through, I should say, I, you know, found that, okay, what do I need to get this assignment done? What do I need to get this done? So it's certainly the attitude towards the, I'm trying to learn and grasp everything, to like, okay, what do I need to do to get this module done this week? Was certainly what I saw myself developing, especially at the midway point of our quarter.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're spot on. I had the same reaction, and that 5 to 10 hours a week, it just, I couldn't figure out how you would do that unless you kind of cut corners. And the thing for me about it was that here was a chance to tap into Silicon Valley, right? Because when you think of the professors that we were learning from and the cohort that we were with, right? That if you just did the 5 or 10 hours in the week, you probably wouldn't get that much out of the program, you know? So you've got to do the work to really get the benefit. But yeah, that was definitely a challenge, I think, early on.
Yeah, I agree. And then especially, I you know, one thing about LEAD that, you know, and I get it, because they can't give you, it's not a degreed program, so they can't give you a Stanford email address, and you know, so there are some things, there was a bit scattered, you know, the different mediums, right? You had Novo Ed, you had the work, you know, the workplace application, and then you had the Verbella, and then you had the actual Stanford website itself. And so there was like four different places where you had to go to. And even though I try to keep my email, my personal email, pretty organized, you know, that was something that it was definitely a bit difficult, because I was constantly always afraid of missing something or you know, screwing something up. And I think that first semester too, I didn't initially apply all the deadlines and everything to my calendar. And, you know, and I quickly did that in subsequent quarters. I made sure that, you know, before it started, that my calendar got all the dates and everything, that, you know, all the module dates, the assignments and everything copied to my personal calendar. But that was something that, you know, also made it a little bit difficult. So it wasn't just you log into one email and everything is there. That's, you know, certainly not the case with that program. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you too. the also, you know, navigating groups across different time zones. Mm-hmm. I think all of us, our group, were pretty lucky in terms of all of us being, you know, somewhat close to the East Coast time zone at the time. Yeah. So I'm not so sure what, you know, some other groups that had different time zones spanning a few hours did. So that was certainly challenging at the beginning as well. But you know, as with anything else, it got to be better and better. And I would say it really took me to the third quarter to really, like, now I know exactly the cadence of how things go. And the third and fourth quarters, I was able to, you know, kind of steamroll through things as better than the first and second.
Yeah, yeah, you and me both. I think I had that same reaction. And you're right about all the different platforms. In addition to sort of the calendaring, the one other thing that was probably super valuable, but were kind of, they weren't sort of published dates going into each class, was the course facilitator kind of Q&A or office hours. And yeah. And if you missed one of those, unfortunately, those were the one element that was not recorded. So that one I felt was a little bit of a challenge as well. Well, why don't we take a quick break, Anoush, and then we'll come right back in just a minute. Hey, if you're enjoying this episode or the series, we invite you to like, share, and or review the podcast. That would mean a lot. Thanks. All right. And we're back talking about the Stanford GSB LEAD program. And we were just talking about some of the challenges, I think, with the technology and such. I was curious, sort of on the flip side for you, what were some of the sort of most positive aspects of the program? And I always think about how you know what you practically apply in your work, right? So did you have things that come to mind there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll tell you this. Overall, it was an extremely valuable program. It was hard at first to, you know, get it back into the swing of school and, you know, balance that with work and personal life. And at the time, my wife was pregnant and, you know, we were new pet owners. So our life was time away from LEAD and work was definitely busy. And so but the best, I would say there was a couple of courses where I really enjoyed it. I mean, the one we, you know, we all had to take, the financing innovation, that was something that was you know, I really enjoyed as well, because that was something where, you know, I had a technical background and I was always a, you know, gregarious engineer, enjoyed meeting people, working with people. And, you know, that this, you know, went into customer service and sales, you know, in a highly technical industry. So, you know, my background certainly lends for it. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have any business credentials or any finance, you know, that I'd taken under my belt. And so the, you know, basically understanding discounted cash flow and you know, the various tenets of corporate finance was certainly helpful. I was using that, you know, those EBIT calculations and various ways to understand how to apply these metrics to a deal that I was working on, rather than just depending on finance telling me, our finance department telling me something. That was something that had a very quick impact for me, you know, in a very positive way, because all of a sudden I'm like, okay, I know how to do this calculation. And when I, you know, when I project like the NPV of this deal that I'm working on, this is something that I know now how to do without the aid of finance. And I was able to kind of poke holes in some of finance's, you know, my then jobs department's, you know, assumptions, right? You made some assumptions, mm-hmm. calculated the MPV. So for me, that was an immediate impact. So that I really cherished, and that's probably what made me want to continue onwards. You know, critical thinking, I think, was a great course, but I had taken those type of courses before in college, and in you know, in high school, and so that was something I was more used to. And it's good to you know, framework your mind around it. And I would say overall with the LEAD program, I felt like I knew a lot of these the you know, the softer knowledge or the subjective knowledge It, just the idea of it, and LEED was providing a framework as to how to apply it. So, you know, the best classes, you know, aside from the corporate finance or financing innovation, was the business model, you know, modeling and analysis class. That was something where I thoroughly enjoyed that. Because for me, in my mind, I always thought of the business model being the financial model. And in reality, that's nowhere near the truth, right? I mean, obviously, I can understand what your business is, whether it's a product or a service, but, you know, or however you're, what you're providing to the world. But I always felt that a business model is tied to the financial model. And that class kind of like took that out of my mindset and said, no, the financial model just supports your business model, though your business model is built around, you know, a bunch of these topics, which, you know, like, for example, Walmart, their whole business model is built around operational excellence, you know, and in that class, they talked about how Walmart used to use these distribution centers, you know, to go ship their products there, and then trucks, you know, then they'd unload all of it, and then trucks would then pick up those products and then go and you know, truck it over to the Walmart departmental stores that we all know. And, you know, one of the things they learned over time is that they're wasting so much time with unloading and reloading. And what they do now is they crafted their own, like, you know, end-to-end truck terminals. And so where trucks go from, you know, from whatever manufacturer of the product or whatever store of the product that's, you know, providing, you know, that couch or that DVD or that umbrella or whatever it is to Walmart, you know, all those goods are in a truck. They get to this terminal at Walmart, you know, the distribution center, and those boxes are loaded directly onto the truck that takes it to the departmental store. So, you know, that was something that, you know, it's a simple recognition, you know, in the evolution of Walmart's business, but it was something that amongst the other examples that stood out to me, it's like, okay, well, are you providing a new product into the world? What's the value that you're creating here? Is this a value creation model? Is this a, you know, operational excellence model? Is this a, you know, services, you know, model that is, you know, like, for example, like, you know, the Jeff Bezos, one of the other topics was, you know, within Amazon, he said that the best customer service is one that simply works. It just, you know, you don't have to talk to anyone. You don't have to speak, you know, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to explain your issue. You go through this, fill out this form, you know, online or on the phone or whatever, and it just works. You don't have to explain things. And so, you know, so those were some of the things that business model class really helped me as I had transitioned from engineering into the business side, and especially when I was kind of looking at potentially transitioning to a new company, you know, I was trying to find meaning and trying to find something that, you know, what do I want to do for the next 10, 15 years, as I mentioned before. So the business model class definitely spoke to me in terms of, you know, how I should be thinking about my next steps in my career and what I should be doing in the business world. So that was definitely one of the highlights.
That's awesome. Yeah, you know, for me, I was making my list, and there were a few that I agree with the comments you made, and then others that I really liked. Living a life of consequence. So if you think about the program overall, right, it's 1 year, it's 9 classes. I think 4 are, or 5 are chosen for you, and then you have 4 electives. And this life of consequence was one of mine. It's a guy named Professor Rod Kramer, who was exceptional. And basically, it's what it sounds like. It drills down and kind of evaluates, have you evaluate your life, what's most important to you as a person, but also as a leader. And in that course, you do really interesting things like write your own obituary, right? Which makes you think, oh, wow, what am I doing? You know, where am I going? And then a couple of others that I really liked was there's a class, called Getting More of What You Want. And it's all about negotiation. And that was an eye opener for me, that every interaction, not just when you're going to, quote, sell something, but even in your day-to-day interactions with your boss, whatever, what is it that you're trying to do or advance? And then how can you use some of those skills to do that? And then there was a related course around persuasion, which I really liked. And then one other was that strategic leadership course. In that one, one of my big takeaways was the idea of what is your strategic filter when you are either making decisions, trying to figure out which programs to advance. So helping you kind of think through. And that's one thing I was going to say, Anoush, is that I found helpful in each of the courses is that they had practical tools or toolkits you could apply in your job. So like in that Life of Consequence course, and I'll link this in the show notes, but there was a tool called the WOOP, W-O-O-P. And what that stood for was a wish. So that's something you're trying to achieve. And then the O is outcome. So what would that look like if it goes well? And then the next O is obstacles. So which are the potential obstacles you're probably going to face as you try and move forward with that idea? And then right. the P is your action plan. So what's your plan if you do hit obstacles? So there were just a lot of these kind of almost like toolkitty kind of things that I found were really kind of useful.
Interesting.
And then you mentioned like critical thinking wasn't as valuable to you. I actually had done a lot of work in disruption, as listeners of my podcast know. So I did take the disruption course, and I found some new takes on disruption, but I didn't find it as useful as some of the previous work that I had done.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, I'm completely with you. I actually. So, you know, what's interesting is that if in terms of the practical applications, that was a very, very clever way to tie in a course content into your current role and current life. Right. And that was something where I was in the mindset that I was in a job at the time where I was already thinking like, I'm not going to progress here. Like, I mean, by progress, I mean, I was seeing that, you know, basically my boss was about, 22 years older than me. I was the youngest guy in that sales team by about 15 years. And just have to sit your time and wait regardless of performance or how well you did. So I was feeling like, okay, I need to kind of look for the next thing or something else. And so I felt some of the applications to your work initially, I wasn't really so thrilled about it because I was like, I don't really want to spend a lot of time and duplicate effort here, at a place where I don't see a longer term future. However, you know, that, you know, and I took the power, I wish I'd taken the power course in the second semester, I took it, I ended up taking it in the last semester, which I'm very happy I did. That was also, I talked about business models and the power course. Strategic leadership, I'm absolutely with you too. You know, that's, and I'll talk about that next. And then design thinking for innovation was also, those are probably amongst all of them, the four courses I really liked. But the power class was something where, and this is where one of the, you know, Rachel, like one of the course facilitators, Rachel Dominguez, Raquel is actually her name, Raquel. So she was an ex-Amazon executive for like 10 years. And then she retired, did some consulting. She's at Stanford Graduate School, MBA graduate in the mid 2000s. And so she was at Amazon for 10 years, led Amazon's entire expansion and growth in Europe. And then basically, you know, came back, did some consulting and kind of is just it has a flexible schedule now and was asked by one of the her Stanford alumni to come help with lead. And that's why she's a course facilitator. And so, she actually was really great to work with and is actually someone that as I was looking for, so now we're talking about, you know, summer of 2021. So almost a year, closing into a year of the lead program. And basically at that point, I'd started to look for roles out here on the West Coast. And I actually asked her for a recommendation to her after the end of lead, because she was someone I got along with well. And she was like, oh, you would be a great fit, you know, at any location. And so she connected me with someone at Amazon as well. So, you know, we're talking about the courses and we'll get to the networking aspect of lead, which to be honest, I should probably be using more, but that was something at the power course, I felt the networking there stronger than with any other course taken through the lead program. But in that power course, basically that one of the, you know, a big part of it was like, they teach you to basically, you know, how power is out there for the taking and like how, if you stick through the hierarchy and ranks in your organization, there's less of a chance for you to potentially succeed or make those, you know, crashing fast waves into an executive position or high leadership position, which you may desire. Or if not, at least a position of leadership within a technical group or a technical team or a technical leader position if you're not a people leader. And so that was something where, you know, they said that basically the you know, the people that go in the unexpected or routes which that you create on your own, you know, is going to make, you're going to get there faster than you would just biding your time and waiting for that promotion. And so they gave a lot of examples of people, how people, you know, kind of circumvented ranks of authority and, you know, did and made things in their career in a way, right, both tangible in terms of, you know, something that they executed on, or just from a networking aspect. So the whole class was about networking, you know, indeed. But in that class, the what they teach you, they expect, you know, they want you to go apply it to your work, and then you have to reflect on the outcome. It was very much like, here's a module, you know, this is what this module is about. Go do this, go talk with someone or talk with your boss or talk with a peer, and then, you know, record that, and here's the results. So you had no choice but to do it. It was like, you know, if you didn't do it, it was going to be even, it would have been harder to not, you know, do those things, it at your work, than it would, you know, than it would, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is that if you tried to fake it, it would have been harder to fake it than actually applying those parts to you know, your real life. And so I had no choice. So I basically started doing, you know, applying some of those principles, and I actually found it, you know, the last 5-6 months of me working in my previous company to be even better because of what I had applied through that power course. And, you know, that was something where Raquel was like, hey, look, I know you want to go. I know you're have a foot out the door, but she was like, if you do this, you had at the time, I had a pretty huge, like a $500 million deal with, you know, with one of my customers on the table. And she was like, if you win this, then you that's on your resume, and you can go do whatever, and you can tell your company, hey, I'm moving, you know, whether you want me or not. And, you know, then the power balance shifts, because now you're an achiever and now you have the leverage. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. Like, why am I even, you know, doubting this? And so, like, it, you know, using some of those principles helped me win some of the deals I was, you know, not completely, but, you know, at least partially, that I had on the table, and also made my work experience in the last months of my time there even better. So, you know, so what I had, you know, maybe initially not disliked about applying those, you know, practical, you know, workshops to your work, ended up actually being really great for me, you know, in that last quarter of lead.
That's wonderful. Yeah, the you know, it's interesting. The power course is the one course that I did not get to take. So at some point, I'm going to go back and do that. And I have the professor's book as well. So I'll link that in the notes as well. But that sounds like a phenomenal course.
Yeah, I would highly recommend it. You know, and a lot of the people that a lot of the speakers and people that he had in that course and class, basically, you know, had the, you know, a lot of the MBA students said their one regret when they went to Stanford was that not taking the power course. So it was something that, you know, I would recommend it. And luckily, I believe we have some time to go back and take some additional, like, you know, a couple of courses. So I would highly recommend you do that, you know, when you have the time, maybe in the future.
It's funny, because of the time that lead took, my wife has sworn me to at least a 6-month break before I can take any other class. So yeah, I said okay. Well, you know, Anuj, you reminded me of one other thing, and that was the cohort that we were with and the network, right? And yeah. And you did remind me, like, hey, I should be leveraging that network more. But one observation, you know, as we went through and I looked at our peers who were also kind of going through the program, I mean, consistently you saw Amazon, Google, Adobe, JP Morgan, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? And so it does seem like this has become a good, strong leadership development resource for bigger kind of growth and tech companies.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's definitely a tech heavy, you know, cohort for sure. There's a lot more people. I don't know if I could say half, but there definitely were quite a few tech people in the lead program than not, right? I mean, I think I could probably count the number in aviation aerospace on my hand. And so it's definitely seems like it would be a good resource for people in that field, or it has become a resource for people in that field. And, you know, I think it's a little bit of For people that are, you know, looking to elevate themselves or were new to management and told by their managers to take that course. So, you know, I think you're right. But for me, it was actually good exposure because I got to talk to a lot of people from Google, a lot of people from Amazon, a lot of people from various tech companies where I was able to, you know, keep that reference. And now that I'm back in the Bay Area, I'm able to leverage those contacts. You know, with I met with one of them for a coffee recently. You know, so that was something that was really nice. And I think anyone, especially the Power course, was a big preacher of networking. So that was something that, you know, almost everyone I was in that class with together, I still have a lot. I'm all LinkedIn friends with, and, you know, there's a lot of active discussions and chats with them about it. But you know, on a side note about that networking, it's interesting because, you know, that's something that, you know, that class tells you to go and you leverage the fact that you went, you know, you're part of the Stanford program. And, you know, when I was looking for jobs or applying to jobs, I was also, you know, I was able to reach out to some people that went to Stanford and said, hey, I'm part of this LEAD program. And initially I was a little hesitant because I was like, hey, I don't want them to think that, like, oh, you know, this is equivalent to them doing an MBA. And I was feeling a little awkward about, like, well, what am I supposed to tell them? And, you know, Raquel also said, well, you know, I'll bet you most of the people that did their MBA don't really have a good understanding of LEAD considering it's new. And second of all, if you are a part of this and you said, yeah, I did this, you know, you're clear it's this executive education program and it's something, you know, I took, you know, to balance, you know, be education and work, they said they should be pretty responsive. And so for a couple of the folks, you know, not everyone's going to be responsive, but for a couple of them, it ended up being, you know, being a good avenue into introducing yourself to someone. So, you know, it just goes to show that, you know, even though it wasn't the MBA program, there's still some benefit of the fact that you were connected to this university.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's great. Well, yeah, you've inspired me to kind of expand my kind of LEAD network as well. Because it is well beyond the cohort, right? There's so many courses cohorts that have gone through it now.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, one last thought on that is this was definitely a very international group, right? I almost felt like it was more ex-US than US participants. I don't know if that's true or not. I'll have to check. But that was kind of really fun too. And you know, being able to brainstorm and problem solve with people who were, you know, in Brazil or India or other markets, you got some really nice perspectives.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that. I had some nice perspectives, international, and the different people from different fields, and that certainly helped out. You know, it was good to kind of see how things were doing or being done in different countries. I'm fully with you there. That was a nice the internationalism was a great part of it. You know, it's just a shame that I almost wish that, like, you know, there was an opportunity to meet some of these folks in person, you know, or like have some sort of class get together. But that's maybe another part where, unfortunately, you know, didn't materialize, maybe because of COVID. Because I think our LEAD class was definitely the biggest it had ever been. And it also was, you know, during COVID, where I believe the previous LEAD classes used to try and meet once at the end of the year. And that kind of went away. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There is that one event, which I have not attended yet, but that's coming up called Me to We, which is part of the GSB. And they look at, it's multi-day. I think this year, it's mostly online. I think one day is in person, but you're right. It would have been great if we were able to really get together.
Yeah.
So, all right, Anoush. Well, look, this has been terrific. I really enjoyed the conversation. Do you have any other like thoughts or any parting thoughts you'd like to share?
Yeah, I think so. Thanks a lot, Paul. I appreciate it. You know, and I think maybe just my passing thoughts is that, you know, if there's something that if I could recommend to someone who's maybe thinking about taking LEAD, it would be like, what, you know, the recommendation would be, what would you get out of it, right? Because I did this when I was unsure about an MBA and I was kind of debating what to do. And I don't think I'll ever go do a full-time MBA. I think only a part-time MBA would be on the cards for me. But but basically, you know, and while a full-time one does sound good, to be able to just dedicate yourself to one thing at a time. But The lead was a good way to get in tune with the Stanford community and understand some of the get a touch point with some of the great professors we had. I would say that I definitely almost wish I had done an MBA instead, because I'm feeling like, man, all the time and effort, if I just done that for another year, you know, and then I just would have my MBA, and that's a done thing, you know, and now it's still, that's still something that is lacking. I shouldn't say lacking. I mean, there's some people in the program who are like, oh, you don't need an MBA after this. And there are some people that actually had an MBA that maybe did it 10 or 15 years ago at maybe not as a name brand school. And basically they said, oh man, this is way better than anything I learned. So, you know, I think for those folks that had the credentials already and they needed a refresher in new age teachings, that's something where, you know, it benefited them. But for myself personally, I feel like, oh man, I kind of wish, I mean, it was a great program, no regrets, but I still have this looming thing over my head of like, okay, I still need to tackle that aspect of it. And, you know, on that note, I mean, that Jeffrey Pfeiffer, you know, the professor for the power class, you know, he mentioned, you know, one of the guys had said, well, can you talk more into this chapter? It seems like this is a shortened version, and you know, and he kind of was looking for a little bit more information. And to that particular question, Jeffrey Pfeiffer was able to, you know, talk a little bit more during one of the live sessions. But he said, look, I wish I could tell you everything, but you know, this program is 8 classes, you know, it's 8 weeks. The MBA program is 17 weeks. So, you know, you're getting really half of what we typically teach here, you know, in this class. So, you know, he said they've had to pick the best examples or what they thought was more applicable towards getting us the most bang for our buck in that short amount of time.
Yeah. Great point. Well, you know, you and I share that feeling on the MBA, because part of me at the end, I was like, oh my gosh, I should have just kept going and done the full MBA. Yet at the same time, I think you're right. I think we were able to tap in through LEAD to like the world's best, right, in terms of professors and thinking and all of that, and do it in an inaccessible way. So it was a win either way, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, great. Well, thanks for taking the time. I really appreciate it. And look forward to keeping in touch and see how your career continues to progress. And hopefully we'll get to meet up soon on the West Coast. I'll be out there before too long.
Perfect. Sounds good, Paul. Thank you very much for having me, and appreciate the time. And yeah, looking forward to hopefully me grabbing a coffee or a beer sometime in the near future. And I'll definitely let you know if I'm ever in the New York area. So
perfect. That sounds wonderful. All right. Well, thanks again.
All right. Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye. Okay,
bye. It's a public show.